This week on the show, we're discussing the release of Marathon, how the game might outlive Highgarde after that game was killed off in the week, and the God of War Rumors 2. We're also discussing Harry's review of Pokemon Pocopia and the newly announced Pokemon Winds and Waves games. I'm your host, Ewan, and I'm joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Harry.
Hello.
And Brody.
Hello.
This is the Pressed Up Podcast, our weekly video game discussion podcast. Let's get on with the show. Brody, first to you. You and I spent a little bit of time over the weekend playing the Marathon Server Slam, putting it through its paces with others out there. Now the game is going to be out there in the world, and you and I are going to be playing a bit more, kind of working our way towards playing through all the content later in the month. Firstly, based on what you've been able to play so far, what are your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, so look, I'll give it the context of saying that I haven't played an extraction shooter before, really. Like, I've obviously dabbled in modes, I guess, that would be extraction adjacent, but like, this is my first actual dip at a, I guess, survival focused extraction shooter. So, but yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Like, as a person that's coming to this game from Destiny, like, I appreciate the aesthetic, the drip, the focus on lore, because that's there. And yeah, just like, the game has such a, everyone's talking about the font slop, but I love the font slop. I think it's, I don't know, it's just so much of the game's identity, and I'm here for it. But yeah, as far as like the gameplay loop goes, like,
I take a bit of issue with the fonts, I'm not gonna lie. That there's a design rule, I'm sure, about not having like more than two or three fonts like in single screen any one time, and they're like, let's have five.
Let them
cook. Bungie threw it out the window.
Let them cook. Let them cook. Yeah, some say they're not even gonna add extra shells; they're just gonna add more fonts to the game.
But
So far, so good. Like, I'm enjoying it. Like, I'm struggling as someone, again, who's come from Destiny, and for me, it was always about like the loot treadmill and trying to like raise my power and all that sort of stuff. I had a clear goal that I was working towards. I kind of don't get what that is long term currently with a game like this. At the moment, I'm just like shunning for like unlocking things in the codex and unlocking cosmetics and things like that. So if that's enough to sustain it, then, you know, that'll keep me going through. But and obviously working towards contracts and things like that. Like, but once that dries up, I don't know what happens. But we don't know what this like cryo, whatever it is, end game mode is like at this point either. So but look, at this stage, like, I'm pretty happy with how the game feels. Like, obviously the shooting is phenomenal. Like, Bungie is like world class at that. Like, everyone complains about the time to kill, but I actually kind of like the time to kill, because it like leads to a lot of like really, not that I have had any, but I've seen a lot of people have like real clutch like 3-on-1 moments and stuff that I don't think would be possible if the time to kill was Destiny like. And it just makes it feel a bit more dangerous, the world, which, like, I remember like in the tutorial, like, I got fucked up by the robot so quickly just because I was like, I underestimated them. So I like that it feels dangerous, and I like that it's like there's a focus on trying to survive and things like that. So yeah, I'm keen to learn more about it. I probably the most fun I had with the game was like that little 20 minutes that we spent like just like trawling through the menus and trying to learn what everything is. Like, I feel like I got a lot out of that alone. So yeah, once this game unlocks, I'm very keen to get back into it.
Like you, I've not really played many extraction shooters in the past, and I do feel like there's a little bit of a daunting learning curve kind of caught up in this for those that maybe haven't played extraction shooters in the past. Like, I appreciate on one hand the game kind of throws you into it pretty quickly, but you quickly start having to siphon through a lot of gear, and you're busy trying to like figure out what all the icons mean. Like, it's very information dense.
And the iconography this game chooses is weird, anecdotally, as well.
Yeah, yeah. And there's like, with every like piece of gear, there's kind of an icon in the top left, bottom left, and bottom right corner, I think. There's a fair amount contained within each little icon of gear.
Wow.
So it's, it is quite dense in that regard. And I can imagine that being pretty off-putting. And anecdotally, I think it was kind of a little overwhelming to the people that I was playing with during the Server Slam as well. That being said, like, within a couple of hours, I felt like I was having a pretty good feel for it and feel for its systems. And I was, like, starting to sort of see what I needed to do to go and complete the sort of priority contracts and equip myself for, okay, well, to get into this area, I'm likely to encounter a number of hostiles. I'll be fending off robots as well as other runners. So I'm not going to do that until I've psyched myself up and kind of got some decent gear under my belt. I'm curious for you both as well, like, given you're such Destiny fans, you mentioned it already, Brody, but you can't have any attachment to your loot in this game. Like, it's like a total reversal on what Destiny was all about. Like, Destiny was, you work towards this gun, or like, you're just playing the RNG to get this gun, and that's it. You finally unlocked it, you can play with it forevermore. Where this one, within the blink of an eye, you could lose your entire loadout.
So that's going to be part of it, like pushing through that fear. But I think they said today anyway, or yesterday in their update where they detailed what Season 2 is going to be all about, like they've said they're going to wipe inventory and everything every 3 months anyway. So I guess that kind of throws that fear out the window.
And we were talking about that as well. I have to imagine that's to level the playing field. Like every new season, chances are new players get involved. They kind of don't want people running out there with like full-on arsenals of kind of high level.
And from what I hear,
it brings people back as well if they like take a break, right? Like I know they do it with Tarkov, and they have a lot. Like a lot of, I have a lot of friends who love Tarkov, and you know they'll take a break for like a month or 2 months or whatever. But when a wipe or a reset happens, they're back on because the playing field is leveled again.
From what I hear, it is pretty powerful. For the course for like other games, like I think Arc Raiders even have a wipe system from what I've read.
But yeah, I'm curious to see what they kind of do with like the not factions, what are they called in this? Are they called factions? Because the kind of cast of characters that you're introduced like pretty early on are all quite intriguing. I love how they kind of play into the lore of it as well. I'm curious to see how that evolves over time and kind of plays into the what narrative there is in the game as well. Harry, is it something you've given a chance to play yet? You're another big Destiny fan.
Unfortunately not. Like, I really wanted to check it out over the weekend. Unfortunately, Resident Evil took priority, and Procopia as well. But yeah, like, I did download it with the intention of checking it out, and time sort of got away from me. I'm really pleased that people seem to be enjoying it, though, especially after, you know, that most recent closed alpha, which had some pretty poor feedback and things like that. So I kind of wasn't interested in it because it was an extraction shooter. But then as they sort of talked about like what they were doing with endgame stuff in terms of like the cryo vault having like raid-like mechanics and stuff and like these puzzles and so on, it's starting to appeal to me a bit more. I've also never played an extraction shooter, so it would be new territory for me. But the more I hear about it, I think I'm pretty likely to check it out when it drops, especially if reviews are good. So,
And I do like some of the mechanics that it's got as well. Like, I'm calling these things out, and they might not be particularly novel for fans of extraction shooters, but like the sponsored loadouts that they have as well. So you've kind of always got some essential gear at your disposal too. Like, there's just nice quality of life elements to that as well. And Brody, like you and I kind of found that when we were sort of hitting a wall in like the second area of the planet, that we were kind of like cycling back to the first area, and that seemed to be a little bit more forgiving to kind of start kind of building up some loot and stuff. I'm curious to see what that progression looks like.
Are the areas like progressive in difficulty? Like, is it the intention you get loot in the first and then you move to the second? Or like,
I don't know how much that's true, but like, you can't like the second area is gated initially, right? Like, you spend some time in the first area until you kind of get a mission to go to the second. I think there's a third that, at least in the service line, that operates the same. So that was kind of my read of it, but I don't know how much that kind of really translates.
I think I've heard that the one even after Dire Marsh is like
the last one
more unforgiving again. Like, it's just like, I don't know if it's maybe that the sweatier players are into those already, and like they're just fucking wrecking people because most people are tutorializing in the first one. But I did find that it seemed to be harder, but that could be a number of reasons.
It could be just
I wondered even if it was like kind of level design, in that there are kind of more denser kind of like points of interest in some of those that just kind of players naturally kind of flock to, like if it was little things like that. But obviously, I was surprised at how just kind of intense the PvE element of it was as well. like there's lightning strikes and bushes blowing up and poisoning you and spiders coming after you, and then obviously all the kind of robots as well. So yeah, it was easy to kind of get caught up in just trying to fend off those, and then some runners would come and jump you. Bless my brother, he didn't realize when we were playing it together that there was a PvP element to the game, and he was like, oh my god, who is this person coming after me? This is very advanced AI. So I broke the bad news to him there that he just got killed
all of a sudden. The prox chat starts and he thinks the AI is talking to him.
I didn't encounter anyone using prox chat. I don't know if Brody's experience was any different, but I didn't experience any prox chat. I didn't experience any, like,
you can turn it on and off, so maybe a lot of people don't use it. But have you seen on I saw it on Twitter that apparently, like, some of the AI in the game, like, mimic prox chat and try and, like, lure you. Like, it's horrifying.
Wow.
Like,
interesting.
Yeah. They're like, look.
God, there's zombies in Resident Evil about it.
They're, like, looking for groups.
Yeah, I'm excited to kind of, like, have some experiences like that. I need to, admittedly, like, I'm guilty of sitting in a party chat as well and not leaning into the prox chat. But, yeah, I want to have some fun with that. Anyhow, could keep going on about the experience of playing Marathon, but I am curious, kind of in light of the news around Highguard this week, what you think the longevity of this game might be and what it needs to do to survive. In case you missed the news that around Highguard this week, it has been announced that the game is shutting its servers, I think, March 12th. So in about a week's time, and there's kind of like one final update to see it out. I have plenty of my own thoughts on that, but maybe first to you, Brody, what chance do you think Marathon has, kind of given it's come under similar scrutiny for its kind of live service nature?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. Like, I can be optimistic and hope that it's going to do really well, but I would genuinely say, like, the echo chamber of my Twitter, at least, it's genuinely 50-50. There's, like, people that despise this game purely because it's live service. Mm. Like, they wouldn't have tried it. They wouldn't have, you know, given it the time of day at all, but they're probably not geared that way. But neither was I until I played it, and I quite enjoy it. But that's the Destiny player in me, I guess. I don't know. I think it's got a bit of an uphill battle. Like, it's got the... Unlike Highguard, it has a, you know, it's $60 for us to buy it off the shelf, like, digitally, so it's not free to play, so that's a barrier to entry already. And yeah, it's just the general distaste toward live service at the moment, even if it is Bungie, and they're, you know, they're the ones who have done live service arguably the best out of anyone over the last decade. Like, Destiny has been it's been a very strong product for at least,
like, Destiny 2, not as much, but yes,
but still a maintainable product. Like, they haven't shut it down, it's got its audience still. Like, but like, yeah, look, I hope this game finds an audience, just because I don't know, I feel like it has the source to that extent, like, from what I've played. Obviously it'll be determined whether it can hold all of us long term, but if what I'm reading in, like, their season 2 promises and what their roadmap looks like I'm pretty optimistic that I'm gonna stick around for it, especially if this end game stuff turns out to be as good as it is. They're gonna bring out, like, variations to the maps and things, new weapons, new shells. And, like, when we played the server slam the other night, I literally used one shell the whole time. Like, I haven't even, like, experimented with the other 5 or 6 or whatever is there. So yeah, I don't know, it's, I'm concerned a little bit just because of the sentiment online, but you know, I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I've been grappling with this a little bit recently because I'm on record being a big Highguard fan. I've played close to, like, 30 hours of the game already, and yeah, I think, like, my frustration is kind of with this camp that just hate with a passion, like, live service titles, and kind of wish nothing but failure upon them,
and revel in it. Like, they celebrate when games get shut down.
Yeah,
it's popular, like, to hate on them.
Like,
or something.
Yeah, fuck off. And I've been grappling with that in the last kind of day or so, and, like, why that's the case. And I kind of understand that, you know, if video game development studios are kind of a precious resource, they kind of don't want their time and effort spent and their investment going into more of this kind of game that they don't like. Like, it's, that's my read of the situation, at least. It's like they want more single player narrative driven games, that they don't kind of have much of an appetite for these live service multiplayer titles, and so kind of actively revolt against them. And I would argue as well, kind of like, lobby for people to go against the games as well, based on their behavior online. And I just think that's a little unfair, in truth. And I think, like, Marathon, whilst there's been some, like, legitimate criticism kind of fueled its way, I do just kind of, like, I hope it does get enough people dive in and actually play it and, like, render an opinion based on their experience with the game rather than what others are peddling out there. In terms of the monetization of Marathon, though, like, I think you're right, Brody. It's clever that they've, well, not necessarily clever, but, like, the right approach to charge an entry fee into the game. I do think that's in some way why Highguard was unsuccessful. Like, it was free to, had a free to play model and kind of relied on microtransactions, yet there was nothing in the store that even me, as someone that was rather enjoying the game, was enticed in any way to invest in the game. And there has to be something said about, like, you're not putting money into a game if you don't see it living long term. And the writing was kind of on the roll with Highguard, unfortunately. So that also kind of made me apprehensive to buy a battle pass, not knowing if it was ever going to materialize.
So
I do think, like, having a kind of $40 US, $60 Australian kind of entry fee into Marathon is probably wise, because that they can be profitable off that, or at least sustainable in the short term, off a smaller player base by way of them kind of coming in at that price point. So yeah, I hope it, like, based on what I've played of the game so far, I was really enjoying it. I'm keen to play more, and for that reason, I hope it kind of sticks around. But yeah, I don't know, Harry, have you got any thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I think it's pretty nuanced in the sense that, like, I think it'll do well. Like, it is selling well. It was top two on Steam, like, just after the server slam, and I think towards the tail end of it. I just checked then, it's top one now as well.
Wow. Okay.
So obviously it's selling. Obviously that's just Steam. Who knows how it's doing on PlayStation and stuff. But I think, like, you know, profitability versus what Sony or PlayStation have in mind for it are two different things. And I also think Bungie's in a really tricky position in that, like, Destiny's at an all-time low right now in player numbers. They're not going to have another paid update for, I don't know, probably till at least September for Destiny. So a lot is riding on Marathon to succeed. And obviously it's been in development for a long time. It's been delayed. I think it's been restarted development at least once. So there's been a lot of money put into this.
Yeah.
So it might succeed, but it might not succeed in the way that PlayStation wanted to. That happened with the Final Shape. And Bungie went through mad layoffs for Destiny after that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's really, really hard to say.
I think it's, yeah, impressive how they've kind of turned around the sentiment on the game, like, based on, I guess, like, the Steam sales data. Because it was in a pretty dark place, looking bad, like, 6 months ago, I guess.
But the same thing happened with the Final Shape. Like, with Destiny's final expansion. Like, they revealed that. People were like, this looks terrible. They delayed it. Sentiment really turned around. I think it's the best reviewed expansion in the game's history. And 3 weeks after launch, they cut off a third of the studio. It made money as well, but it's just not enough.
Yeah. My worry this time as well is, like, given how different it is to Destiny, like, stylistically, kind of genre, like, just by any metric, really, with the exception maybe of, like, the kind of progression, although it kind of flips that to be much more character based than gear based. My worry is that, like, a lot of the Destiny player base doesn't one for one kind of transplant over.
I don't think they will. Which
would have been a huge win for Bungie, but I think they're kind of reliant on finding new audience with this game.
Yeah, appealing people off of Tarkov and Hunt and Ark Hunters and stuff, which is easier said than done, I think.
100% So I think it's got a similar problem to Highguard in that, in the sense that it's kind of entering a saturated space with very well established games already there. But yeah, curious to see how it shakes out. Like you, Brody, I've enjoyed what I played so far and eager to play much more. Let's change gears somewhat, though, but sticking with PlayStation a moment longer. According to a report from Bloomberg, PlayStation will no longer publish games on PC, opting instead to keep their games exclusive to their consoles. Ghosts of Yote and Saras are supposedly the first games to be on the chopping block, with a PC port of Ghosts of Yote ditched in the last couple of weeks. Harry, maybe first to you, why do you think this might be the case, that they would sort of change tack to PlayStation?
I'm not really too sure. Normally I would say, like, exclusivity and things like that. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard because I feel like they were sort of in a position in the console market, at least, where like people aren't going to Xbox for exclusives, not currently at least. I don't think people are picking up PCs to play these games, though I could be wrong. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they just want to strengthen their own portfolio, give more people a reason to buy a PS5 when hardware is getting more and more expensive. Obviously, the Switch is going to be a bit of a powerhouse in the sense that you've got all these exclusives on Switch 2. It's around the same price point. It's also newer hardware, so maybe there's a perception that it's going to last longer than if people were to buy a PS5. So, yeah, I would say it probably roots in, you know, them trying to get more hardware sales or whatever, but whether that eventuates, I'm not too sure.
Yeah. I wonder as well, Brody, could they just crunch the numbers and realize, like, oh, we're getting better margin if we convince people to buy a PlayStation player on that platform rather than a year later on PC?
Possibly. And I wonder if it's because they do bring these PC ports quite so late after the fact. Like, I don't think the same allure is there as when they get there. Could also be that, you know, they're trying to return to that PlayStation that really, it felt like their first party story driven games that were like quite a premium thing. And I feel like that has gone away a little bit. And it could also be the fact around the rumors that, you know, like the next Xbox might be like a hybrid thing that runs Steam, and they don't want, you know, the next Xbox home console to be able to play these games on the TV.
And the Steam machine as well.
Yeah, Steam machine. Like, that could all be a factor. Like, they don't want other consoles being able to, like, cut their grass, I suppose. But, like, I'd have to imagine they're leaving a bit of money on the table. Like, I imagine, like, Steam sales wouldn't have been, like, not consequential. Like, there would have been, like, good money there. So, yeah, to your point, I'd say they've probably crunched some numbers and they thought, if we can swing people back to, you know, our home console and, you know, invest in the ecosystem itself rather than spreading ourselves everywhere, we can sort of get back to what we had in, like, the PS4 era, maybe.
I wondered, like, how much the next generation might be a factor as well. And I think you brought up some good points there, Brody, that, like, that's already shaking up to be very different from what Steam are doing or what Xbox are doing. I wonder if PlayStation are kind of thinking, well, we're going to have like a handheld SKU, we're going to have like a premium console, and then maybe kind of more of like a mid-tier sort of console as well, if the rumors are to be believed. Perhaps in their mind, they're like, well, we're giving you plenty of opportunity to play this on the PlayStation hardware of your choice, be it handheld, be it kind of a PC equivalent, or be it a home console. Like, we're going to throw up at the walls of our walled garden once more, because you've got every sort of PlayStation device at your disposal that you could otherwise play the game on. Yeah, I guess I question their ability to do that, really. I'm a little bit unconvinced that, like, Last of Us Part 3, let's say, is going to be just as appealing on, like, the PlayStation 6 handheld device as it is, like, the PS6 Pro. But, yeah, I wonder if they're kind of just, like, setting expectations ahead of that next gen release. But yeah,
it just feels strange as like a mid-gen decision. Like, I do wonder if maybe you know, these rumors about the PS6 being indefinitely delayed because of hardware prices and shortages and things like that has them thinking about, you know, sort of reinvesting into the PS5 and trying to get people to buy consoles now if the PS6 is going to be pushed back, you know, a year, 2 years, whatever it is. But yeah, I think there's a lot of factors around it at the moment.
I wonder, like, how much even GTA 6 is kind of a factor, too. Given I think there's, like, a cohort of gamers that are probably held off upgrading to a PS5 in anticipation of that game. I wonder if they're kind of just like, well, if you were thinking, I'll just wait for the PC release of GTA 6, because PlayStation games are coming there now, too, as well, eventually. If they're just like, nah, if you want to play your PlayStation games, like, you just get the PS5 and you can play GTA 6 there at launch. I don't know. Maybe it's a combination of factors, but yeah, it's curious. Particularly, I think Saros, like, given I think Returnal was like really successful on PC.
It did really well on Steam, I'm pretty sure, and like it plays really well on PC as well. Like, it's if Saros had like come out on PC in a year at a discounted price, I probably would have picked it up just to play it with mouse and keyboard, you know. But
yeah, 100%.
I do wonder why they've never bothered to try. And it might be because they do value the home console, but I wonder why they've never tried like a big blockbuster AAA story-driven game like Day and Date on PC. Because I reckon there'd be an enormous audience on PC that would pick up a game like Saros Day and Date.
Absolutely.
Or even The Last of Us Part 3, for argument's sake.
But did Helldivers...
Helldivers is the only one, but that's... that's because it's one of these live service games, and they want to, like...
I don't think that quite carries the same, like, prestige, like, as Brody mentioned earlier. It's sort of, like, a premium thing, like...
Yeah. Like, can you imagine what Wolverine would sell?
Just in terms of, like, the success...
Yeah, Wolverine would do gangbusters. Like, it would go crazy.
Yeah, so it just seems weird to pull back and, like, just opt for safety against this and not just at least try... Mm. You know, or maybe we're going about this PC thing wrong. Why don't we just embrace it wholly and go day and date and make a shit ton of money? But no, let's not worry about that.
They could have had an opportunity to do that later this year with a new God of War game, if the leaks are to be believed. In the week, some leaks appeared from notable leaker Nate the Hate, suggesting that Sony Santa Monica's next game would be set within the God of War universe and star Atreus' mother and Kratos' second wife, Faye. I think you guys are both God of War fans, as am I. Harry, maybe first to you, what do you, if assuming this is true, like, what would you hope this game would look like? What direction might it take?
Yeah, I genuinely have no idea. I think it's really cool. It's a really cool idea to focus on this character, I think, especially given, like, I think so much of what drove, like, the story and the engagement in 18, apart from, like, you know, this new interpretation of Kratos and his relationship with Atreus, was that core mystery of, like, who was she, like, why is she so important? And obviously that whole game was like centered around this journey of taking her ashes to the peak of this mountain and stuff. So I think it's a really cool idea, and, like, you know, if it's supposedly more action focused than the Norse god games were, I'm all in for that as well. Yeah, very, very keen on that idea. I don't know how it would eventuate and sort of how combat would work with her and things like that. But I mean, Barlog did such
like
a great...
Her powers were more like witchy, right? Like,
yeah, I think so.
I'm curious to see... I have to imagine it would feel like a very different game to play given kind of her ability.
But just based on like how good of a job Barlog did with you know, the reboot and things like that, I'm like, I'm all in. Like, I was going to check out whatever it was anyway. So yeah, I'm really eager to see what this is like and how it's shaped up and what they've got cooking. I think it's cool.
Yeah. And as interested as I am in like the continuation of the story and like what's next for Atreus, like she's like kind of consequential character. We don't know a huge amount about, and there's this really big kind of time gap, right, in the series too, that it would be interesting to learn more. So that element of it interests me. What about yourself, Brody? Does it do much for you if these rumors are to be believed or this leak is to be believed?
Yeah, look, happy for the God of War fans. Like, I've played them both, but I've never finished 2018 or Ragnarok. I think I am. All the parts I've played have been great. I don't know. I just drop off it, like 2 or 3 hours in for some reason. But I mean, it's interesting. Like, part of me was hoping Barlog was doing something new, but then obviously the rumors came out that it was going to feel like a new IP, but it wasn't actually a new IP. And I think the writing was on the wall there that it was probably a continuation or a spin-off, I guess, of God of War. But I think a more action-oriented one, like whether it plays like a Devil May Cry, for argument's sake, or like the classic God of War games, I think that could be interesting to sort of go back to that. But to your point, if it's more magic-y and, you know, it might play more like Control or something like that, I don't know. I think wait and see what it looks like, I suppose. And, you know, I might reinvest my time into God of War and get through those games on Steam, maybe, and maybe on my next Xbox if I'm allowed to.
Hopefully it's not too far away that we get a glimpse of it. It's suddenly kind of adding a bit more kind of context to what Christopher Judge was talking about to some fan at the convention. I think we spoke about like an episode or two ago. He was suggesting that we would kind of hear more about it, his next project later this year, which I guess it'd be safe to assume Kratos kind of makes some appearances if this is about his wife and the life that they had together. So, interested to see what happens and when we hear more about it. We're going to take a quick break now, though, and be back in just a moment to talk all things Pokemon. Harry, you reviewed Pokemon Pocopia, an interesting Pokemon game. It's been all over my timeline and algorithm in the past week. What did you score it and why?
Yeah, I scored it a 9, which is
huge.
Yeah, very high. And that's where the general consensus is sitting. I think it's at a 90 on Metacritic. I think it's the highest rated Pokemon game on Metacritic, which is crazy. I actually hadn't realized until the previews dropped last month that this was developed by the team that did Dragon Quest Builders 1 and 2. And so when I heard that, that was what kind of got me really jazzed about it, because those games are fantastic. The DNA of those is still here, but this game is probably a little bit more, leans more into like Animal Crossing. It's just like, generally speaking, such a good idea. Like, it's like on paper, it's a home run. I think it's executed really well. It's really cute. It looks great. And you could just sink so much time into it. Like, even if you just want to do the main story or you want to keep playing past that. But there's just so many different bits and pieces, and the way that it like recontextualizes catching Pokemon and like learning their abilities as a Ditto. The story stuff is pretty interesting as well, which hasn't been the case in Pokemon for a good while. There's just so many aspects of it that I think appeals to a lot of different people and people who are fans of different franchises. I think if you like Pokemon, you'll probably enjoy it. If you like Animal Crossing, you'll enjoy it. If you like Minecraft, you'll enjoy it. If you like all of those, you're going to love it. I think it's just a really big get for the Switch 2 and Nintendo and Pokemon as well. Like, it was a really great time.
You kind of observed at the start there that it's like one of the highest, if not the highest, rated game on Metacritic, Pokemon game on Metacritic now. It was something that Brody drew my attention to earlier in the week as well. Do you think it ought to be kind of part of the conversation and one of the best Pokemon games of all time, as those scores might suggest?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like in the context of Pokemon spin-offs, absolutely. As well, I mean, in the context of mainline games as well, it is fundamentally different from those, though. Like, there's no battling. It's very much like a cozy game. I think it's sort of the, like, almost in the way New Horizons was like a breakout hit. This feels like the same. I think, like, it will be very fondly remembered amongst, like, you know, all the Pokemon spin-offs. It will definitely be considered among the top three easily, definitely for me, and based on, you know, other people's reviews and how the community has reacted to it, like, yeah, it will be fondly talked about and remembered. I hope it's, you know, in the conversation for awards at the end of the year, because it definitely deserves some.
it surprises me so much. Like, I mean, I guess it shouldn't, because you're right, like, on the premise alone, it seems like such a no-brainer, and just like kind of the perfect amalgamation of like IP with kind of genre. But yeah, the fact that like everyone is speaking like so highly about this, and quite frankly, people that I didn't expect to speak highly about this, like people I don't particularly think of you as a cozy gamer, and yeah, other reviewers out there that have spoken positively about it as well. It's surprising.
Yeah, I don't know. I do enjoy, like, there are a few cozy games that I've really gotten into. Like, I really like New Horizons. I played a lot of that. But I think it's just something about, you know, blending Pokemon with it that really does something for me. And the way that, like, there's just so many little genius decisions. Like, the way that you you find Pokemon in this game is, like, you come across hints in the wild, and it will basically, like, give you an idea of how you need to arrange, like, grass or objects to get certain Pokemon to appear. So, like, it starts out really simple. Like, hey, if you do four tufts of tall grass next to each other, maybe a Squirtle will appear. But then later on, it's like, you know, you're crafting furniture and stuff. And, hey, if you arrange, like, a bed and a doll, maybe you'll find a Slowking and things like that. And, like, they all have their own personalities. They all have their own skills. So they, like, feed into the progression further. Through, like, some of them will build and some of them have the ability to cut, and some of them will teach you skills that you can use to terraform the land and, like, do all sorts of stuff. So, like, I don't know, it's constantly looping back into itself. And one thing that I really enjoy, and Pokemon fans will really enjoy, it's set in Kanto, which is the region for like Red and Green, the first generation of Pokemon games, but it's sort of in a state of disrepair. So you go through, like, these cities and places from Kanto, but the scale is much bigger because you're a Ditto. So that's really cool to see it from a different perspective. And they're in states of disrepair, and you get to sort of fix these places as to how you remembered them when you played these games as a kid. And it was this type of nostalgia that, like, I don't know, it was very, I felt pandered to in a way that I think James wanted to be pandered to with Requiem, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
It was just like, as a fan, really satisfying. I think people will love it. It's really good.
I must admit, like, I'm very much on the record for being a lapsed Pokemon fan. I've just kind of there's never really been much of an iteration on the formula that's kind of interested me all that much. But yeah, I feel like this could be the one that has me diving back in. And I know it's a very different sort of Pokemon game, but it's kind of what I've been asking for. And yeah, watching again all the clips that I have seen kind of emerge from this game, like over the past few days, it's got me interested. And yeah, I'm not committing to it. This is not a promise, but do not be surprised if you see me dabbling with a bit of Pokopia. Pokopia.
Pokopia.
I caught myself out again. I keep saying Poketopia. I just nearly got that wrong again. Brody, what about yourself? I see you're deep in thought there. Are you any likelihood for dabbling in a bit of Pokopia?
Yep, I went and bought my copy today. It's inside.
Did you?
Ready, hey. Yep, ready to go. I got at JB at 9 o'clock on my way to work and just picked it up. It was in the car all day, just beckoning to me. as someone who has nostalgia for blue, red, and obviously I'm probably more a silver gold guy, but obviously definitely blue, red, green, great games, yellow. I've got nostalgia for that, but I'm also a big Viva Pinata fan, and I get like Viva Pinata vibes from this big time. So knowing that
that's a good comparison.
Yeah, because the everyone's saying Animal Crossing, but the way you're talking about how you have to sort of meet certain conditions to have them like come to your garden, it's very Viva Pinata coded.
Very
similar.
Yeah.
And that's a game I've been telling Ewan to play for, you know, the better part of half a decade, but he just won't. So maybe Pokopia is his way into Viva Pinata. So
his gateway to Viva Pinata.
Right. Seeing as I'm never going to get a third one of those, I think this is going to scratch that itch for me.
Absolutely. And it's also really great. It has game share and it works with Switch 1 consoles as well. So like if you have family or friends with a Switch 1 console, you can play with them, they can join your world, and you know, you can do whatever you want together, and like that's so cool. You know, you only need one copy of the game. Former hardware, like I can play with my partner, she's got a Switch 1. Yeah, it's really cool.
I think I know people that are going to put pressure on me to go buy it based on that premise, you know.
Hey, Ewan, you've got a Switch 2, right?
Yeah, literally, yeah. All right, well, let's talk about another Pokemon game. We had our first look at Pokemon Winds and Waves, and there are three new starters. Browse, a grass-type Pokemon, Pom-Bom, a fire-type Pomeranian Pokemon, and best of all, arguably, this is Shannon's words that I'm reading here straight from the article, Gekwa, a water-type gecko Pokemon. My question to each of you, Pokemon Winds and Waves, three new starters, which one are you picking? Brody.
I'm going to, you know, just off the rip, if I'm going to pick them based on appearances and just what I'm into, I think I'm going the grass type bird. I'm going the grass bird. I'm going Brout.
Oh, really?
I think so. A gecko doesn't really butter my bread, and I don't know.
Brout's a fan favorite.
There you go.
Absolutely. There's memes everywhere about
this. He's such an angry looking little bastard. I love it.
Yeah. I just assumed everyone would be Pom-Bom, to be honest. I mean, I'm a gecko.
Fire starters are overrated. Fire starters are overrated.
Gekwar is giving like Platy the platypus vibes.
Yeah,
I
think Gekwar is a little too saucy for me. I'm Brout definitely. He looks like he's got attitude. He looks like he fuck you up.
Okay,
yeah.
Harry, what's your vote?
I think this is a great set of starters. I really like Brout, and in Scarlet and Violet, I also really like the fire type starter. Fuecoco, but I've always been a water type guy, and I always will be. For my first playthrough, at least, it'll be Gekwa for me. Yeah. I just hope that they do like a cool and like, you know, I don't know. I hope they go back to like the old school.
You mean? Is that what
I hope the final evolutions are like more along the lines of like Blastoise, Empoleon, Swampert. Like, instead of the more recent trends of water types being a bit more fanciful.
Bring Feral Gator back.
Not that I.
We want to get
that's what I mean.
We want to see them get aggro and weird.
Yeah, I want to see them get mad, you know? Like, let's bring back mad water type starters. But you never know.
Harry, what do you make of the look of the game otherwise, starters aside? I know we didn't haven't seen a huge amount so far, but a bit yeah, of a, I think, like a setting trailer.
I'm excited that they're like sticking to the open world formula and they seem to be expanding on it and you can go underwater and stuff. Yeah, a lot of the
looks cool.
Yeah, a lot of the leaks around this game seem to be true based on the trailer, and there's some really interesting stuff that they seem to be doing that I won't get into, obviously, because, you know. But, yeah, like, I'm keen. I do think as Switch 2 exclusives, they look a little visually underwhelming at the moment. Other than the water looks incredible. Yeah. But, yeah, I don't think they're quite the step up from Scarlet and Violet that I wanted to see, but hopefully that changes in the time between now and release. So,
and yourself, Brody, is this another you see diving into?
Yeah, look, possibly. I haven't played a mainline Pokemon game since, shit, maybe X and Y. Like, it's been a while. So,
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I've felt the itch. Like, I've just convinced myself not to buy, like, Zeta A. Like, I don't want to get into that just because I don't. No, but maybe I'll just wait and see what happens with this one. If it reviews well, I'll jump in. Especially if I play Pokopia right up until then.
The only thing that kind of deters me a little bit is these, like, the cruise ship Pokemon Pikachu characters. Like,
oh, right. The variants.
Yeah.
Yeah, they look a bit strange.
They do. They're just a little off-putting. They do look like the kind
of uncanny,
weird couple that you might encounter on a cruise ship that I try to convince you to involve yourself in like a menage a trois or something like that. anyhow, I don't go on cruise ships. Maybe for that reason. So what would I know?
Maybe for that reason.
I have a rapid fire question for the two of you before we go to What the Wiki. The head of content for Assassin's Creed all but confirmed a Black Flag remake was on the horizon. Speaking of water. Would you dive back in and sail the seas once more, Brody?
Hated Black Flag. I'm very much a...
Really?
I'm in the minority there, I know. But I really hate naval combat in these games. I hate it. So,
well,
I shan't be getting back onto the high seas, I'm afraid.
I mean, I would hope that, like, who knows what sort of this takes. But if it was a remake or they kind of, like, redid some of the systems, I wouldn't mind that being a little bit tidied up. I loved Black Flag. I would be tempted to go back. Harry's nodding. I think you would answer the same.
Yeah, I'm contrasted with Brody on this. I think it's the best Assassin's Creed game, so absolutely.
Wow.
Wow, that's a... That's,
that is a big call. Okay. What the Wiki is the Press Start podcast game show where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game and we the contestants must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with the round concluding after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. Currently in the lead we have James on 8 points, Shannon a close second on 7, Harry, you and I are tied on 4 points apiece, and Brody currently bringing up the rear on 1 point. But in fairness to you, Brody, we've not been able to have you on the show in the last couple of weeks, so maybe we need to give you a bit of an opportunity to catch up.
Double points for me already. Good.
Double points. I'm just like setting the scene now for when I bomb in this episode that you like
catch back up. Set it up for you. 3 point sweep. Exactly. Here we go.
As last week's winner, though, Harry is in the hosting chair today. Take it away when you're ready, Harry.
All right. There is a theme. I'm not sure how this will go, but. The game is a role-playing game. Oh, well, the first game is a role-playing game developed by Genius Sonority and published by a company for the GameCube. Brody. It is a spin-off of a series. Oh. Yes, Brody.
Is it Pokemon? XD Gale of Darkness?
No. It was released on November 21st, 2003 in Japan, March 22, 2004 in North America, and May 14, 2004 in Europe. Unlike previous titles, random encounters are gone, and the game instead allows the player to steal or snag the monsters of other monster trainers. The game also features single-player and multiplayer battle modes.
So it's a Mozzie, sorry.
Okay. So I thought you had a moment of like...
Yeah,
it has not come to me.
Set in the desert region of Ore, the player controls Wes, a former member of Team Snagem. Snag'em, actually, sorry. Throughout the game, Wes rescues shadow monsters. Monsters who have had their hearts darkened by Team Cypher, an antagonistic organization via snagging. Rui, a non-player character, serves as Wes's sidekick and identifies shadow monsters. The game was exhibited at E3 2003 and featured monster models ported from the Nintendo 64 game and game sequel. North American pre-orders included... Yes, Brody.
Well, there was no Stadium 3, but I know there was another one. Is this Pokemon Colosseum?
It is.
Oh, well done.
Thank fuck.
Very good. Okay.
GameCube Pokemon game. I never stood a chance.
All right. The game is a 2012 tactical role-playing video game developed by Tecmo Koei and published by a company for the Nintendo DS. The game...
Is this like Brody. Pokemon Mystery Dungeon?
No, it is not.
Is that a game?
It is a game.
Yeah.
The game is a crossover between a franchise and the Nobunaga's Ambition video game series. The game was released in Japan on March 17, 2012, and was released in North America, Australia, and Europe later that year. The prospect of a crossover between these two series was formed in part due to the company president, Tsunekazu Ishihara, enjoying Nobunaga's Ambition, with Tecmo Koei handling programming, art, graphics, and sound, while the two companies collaborated on design documents and concepts. When being localized into English, the designers opted not to change Japanese names and terms due to how weird the setting would feel without them.
I have no idea what this game is, quite frankly.
Did you say
DS?
In the dark.
It's for the DS, man. Yeah.
Did you say, what was the date as
2012?
Well?
2012.
And it was a crossover with Nobunaga's, whatever.
Nobunaga's Ambition and another franchise.
Holy smokes. Have we heard of this game, do you think?
I wouldn't say it's obscure. Oh. It's actually fairly high rated.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. You might not have played it, but we'll continue for a little bit. The player, accompanied by an Eevee, travels throughout the Ransei region, befriending Pokemon and battling warriors and warlords to conquer and unite the region. Warriors and warlord leaders can join the player's party once defeated, allowing the player to access more Pokemon.
I didn't know this game existed. This game sounds tough, though. Okay.
Yeah.
Shall we pass on?
I don't know. Is there any hints you can give to lead us? Or
yeah. I'm like looking for
words
any context,
in the title or something.
Than, like the description of the game.
The gameplay is very... It's a one-word subtitle, so it's...
Okay.
It's franchise something. And the word is very rooted in the gameplay.
It's good.
So you befriend Pokemon and battling warriors and warlords to conquer...
Pokemon. I mean, Brody.
And unite...
Is that just the answer?
I don't know if you hit the...
Yes, Brody.
Is it... No, it's not going to just be that.
It could be.
Pokemon conquer.
No.
Damn, though.
Is that what you were going to say?
That's literally... Brody just decided to go something else. That's what I was going to say. Pokemon...
Do you want me to keep going?
It's going to be one of these words.
What did you say, Ewan?
Pokemon Quest?
Brody.
No. Brody.
Pokemon Conquest.
Yes, Brody. I thought you said it, Ewan. I thought you just blurted out Conquest, and I was like, oh, you got it. No.
Clearly there was something in my brain somewhere.
Yeah, so it's a turn-based strategy game. It's like Fire Emblem, but with Pokemon. It's very popular.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, it reviewed really well.
Never heard of it. Well done, Pokemon Company.
I mean, I know I was not paying attention to Pokemon games anymore, but...
So that was just before X and Y, was it? Was X and Y 2013? No.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was just after Black and White 2. Yeah, right. It has an 80 on Metacritic.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Badass cover art, by the way. I'm just looking.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a great game. It's really good.
Bring it to NSO.
Well, Brody, like as I had set up for you, that was a very prophetic. A clean sweep, which bumps you right up to 4 points Pokemon equal Quest. With myself and Harry. So, real rubber band there. Now, Harry, as today's host, we do have some trivia questions prepared for you. I have a Metroid question for you, Brody.
And I have a Destiny lore question.
Destiny lore.
Oh,
he's taking the Destiny lore. Okay.
Okay. Multiple choice. Who created the Gjallarhorn? Options.
I reckon he knows already.
Do you know already?
I think I know, but I need to say the options.
Okay.
You want the options.
Option one.
Yeah.
Lord Shax. Option two. Vel'Tarlo. Option three. Fazal Crux. Option four.
Fazal Crux.
It is Fazal Crux. He's too good.
Wow.
He's too good. As soon as I heard it. Fazal Crux. Well, that's a point for Harry.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. A point for Harry. There you go. I definitely came away from this round the biggest loser of the bunch. Harry with the extra point, bumping him up to
he's
5 points.
He's just a Destiny sicko.
And Brody catching up with me.
Not he's a sicko. I didn't even know that. Yeah. And I thought I was a sicko. But
when you mentioned Lord Shax, I was like, oh, I recognize that name. I might guess that. Would have been wrong. All right. With that, let's bring then to what was this week's episode of the Press Start podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener, the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at press.com.au. We've been joined today by Harry.
Yes, you can follow me on socials at Harry_Callow and go read my Pokemon Pokopia review.
And with a clean sweep, it was Brody.
Thank you. You can follow me on most things at Brody_DG. I had a Planet of Lana 2 review go up yesterday, or this morning. And we've got a Mouse PI for Hire preview going up probably now as you're reading it. So check those out. Maybe we'll talk about them next week if Marathon doesn't shut down during the week and we've got plenty to talk about. but otherwise, over to you, Ewan.
And I've been your host, Ewan. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxburgh. We'll be back again next week. But until then, happy gaming.
Let's go play Pokertopia.